Chapter 11, Jesus's Problem. Among the surest facts from Jesus' life, speaking from a historical perspective, are his dealings with sinners and those who were ritually impure, as well as his violation of the Sabbath commandment, and the absolute claims he made in proclaiming a different view of God, the end of the world, and the time of grace. Many of his contemporaries considered Jesus a libertine, a glutton, and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Jesus' behavior from the beginning aroused amazement, joy, and enthusiasm, but also suspicion, rejection, scandal, and hate. The likes of Jesus had never been seen or heard before. For a pious Jew, Jesus' behavior and message were nothing short of scandal, even blasphemy. The proclamation of a God whose love goes out to the sinner cast God's own holiness and justice into doubt. All of this soon earned Jesus the animosity and hatred of local leaders. Jesus must have appeared to them as a false prophet because of his new and revolutionary teachings about God. According to Jewish law, this was punished with the death penalty. The prophet who presumes to say in my name a thing I have not commanded him to say, or who speaks in the name of other gods, that prophet shall die. In Jesus' mind, poverty and illness were not punishments from God. God loved the poor and the sick. That explains why Jesus went out looking for people who were not interested in God and admitted into his company and even to his table sinners and outcasts, the ritually impure. He conversed with all kinds of people and had no qualms about dealing with anyone. Jesus did not declare anyone his enemy, not even those who were seen as enemies of God. In Jesus' view, God was a friend to all people. And in the final eschatological moment that Jesus was inaugurating, God was willing to forgive and receive everyone into his kingdom. The only condition was to accept and believe in Jesus' announcement and to act from there on in like children of God. Jesus' behavior reflects faith in a God whose way of being did not square with the God of the scribes and Pharisees. The way Jesus lived his life struck many, especially the religious leaders who governed the people, as simply intolerable. His behavior was scandalous also for the way he treated women. He did not abide by the precautions handed down by tradition. He gave preference to tax collectors and sinners over the righteous. He did not seem to venerate or set much store by the temple. He was not awed by the sight or the building, although he did recognize it as the house of God that had been turned into a den of thieves. He assigned a relative value to the observance of the Sabbath rest and purification rites. He believed he was superior to Abraham, Solomon, Moses, and the prophets. He did not call himself Messiah, but he believed he was greater than the Messiah. He did not arouse the people to rebellion, but he taught them to be free. If Jesus has adhered more strictly to the norms and traditions, if he had not kept the company of tax collectors, sinners, prostitutes, the poor, and the sick, if he had limited himself to preaching principles without ever carrying them out in practice, he would certainly not have died the way he did. Jesus was labeled an agitator and a rebel, not so much for his doctrine, which was not analyzed in depth at the time, as for his behavior. The gospel clearly shows that Jesus could have avoided his death. The contingency of Jesus' passion and the responsibility of others for his death has not been kept sufficiently in mind. The first reflections of the evangelists and the early church oriented subsequent thinking in a way that left little room for the responsibility of others and the possibility that the passion might not have taken place. The prophecies about the passion insinuated that the events had to occur because they were foreordained. To the question, why did Jesus die? The answer was, because it was foreseen, prophesied, even by Jesus himself, and because it was God's plan. By now it has been widely shown, and most exegetes agree, that the prophecies of the Passion as told in the Gospels are ex eventu predictions, as prophecies made after the facts are known. They are not really true prophecies at all, but rather announcements of events in the form of prophecies. The prophecies of the Passion did not belong to the oldest documents, document C. The first version of Mark's Gospel did not include them. Matthew and Luke, who took Mark as their source, show considerable discrepancies with Mark's version. The prophecies assume a detailed knowledge of the Passion and Passover. The resurrection narratives present the events as surprising, i.e., unexpected, not prophesied. For the evangelists, the resurrection was taken as the confirmation of Jesus' life and doctrine, of his power and authority, rather than as the fulfillment of a self-made prophecy. It is perfectly clear that Jesus did not die because of any personal fault. This is the implicit assumption of all the Passion narratives. Jesus' innocence, however, does not rule out a real conflict between Jesus and the law. There is a relationship between the crucifixion of Jesus and his previous acts. Jesus touched on issues that were untouchable for the Jews. He manifested power and authority in opposition to the law and Moses, but I say, in the counterpositions of the Sermon on the Mount. In the Jewish mentality, only God was above the law and Moses. He forgave violations of the law with absolute confidence and equanimity. He cured and performed miracles on the Sabbath in defiance of the law. His behavior was irreverent because his way of acting put him outside of God, or above God, or equal to God. He sat at the same table with tax collectors and sinners, causing intolerable scandal. He seemed to accept and agree with the Roman occupation. The cause of his death does not seem to have been his doctrine, or his having attributed to himself some title, Messiah, Son of God, Servant of Yahweh, etc., but rather his actions on certain specific occasions. What he said against the temple and his actions there was an attack on authority, tradition, and customs. But the underlying motive of the conflict should be sought in the overall picture of his actions, not in specific cases. He put himself above the law and took God's authority as his own. The pretext for which Jesus was turned over to the Romans, i.e., for calling himself the Messiah, can be ruled out as the cogent explanation of the cause of his death. Jesus almost certainly rejected the title of Messiah. The fact that pretexts were used to condemn him points up the lack of any accusatory document backed up by the law. The conflict was over Jesus' person, not the violation of any article of law. Jesus did not die for siding with the weak or spending time with them, but for putting himself in God's place. Under a law that was seen as the ultimate criterion for salvation, Jesus could not be seen as anything but a blasphemer, and yet with his power and authority, he had put himself above it. In the eyes of the authorities, Jesus deserved the death sentence. The sentence might have been like this one. Jesus of Nazareth, son of Joseph, the carpenter, has incurred an inevitable contradiction with the law as currently enforced. His guilt is a case of a crime against religion. The law is brought down upon him, and we sentence him to death. Jesus was innocent, but it was not just a case of the Jews acting in bad faith. The conflict went much deeper. Jesus failed not only in the eyes of a few inept and unjust Jews, but in terms of the law, the authority of which was questioned by his actions. Jesus also failed in the eyes of the people. The people, in fact, neither converted nor believed in him, nor changed their behavior. The people en masse turned against Jesus and rejected him. Crucify him, crucify him. We have no king but Caesar. Death as a final and irrevocable outcome was the answer that the authority found reasonable and fair, if only as a peacekeeping measure. The cause written in Latin, Greek, and Hebrew, Jesus the Nazarene, King of the Jews, was more a mockery than the real cause. Jesus never proclaimed himself as king or suffered others to proclaim him one. Only in the light of the resurrection is the conflict with the law illuminated. The resurrection could only be understood as an act of God himself, which meant the confirmation of Jesus' message and life in opposition to the judgment of the Jews. If Jesus rejected in the name of the law, has been resurrected by God, then the law is a flawed expression of God's will, because in the end, God did not back it up. But the message of Jesus' resurrection, executed in the name of the law, constituted a veritable scandal. The resurrection had the effect of annulling the law as such. The leaders of the people and the Jews were evidently disqualified and shown to be unjust. The issue at the root of Jesus' conflict with the Jewish authorities was not his refusal to accept authority in general, but his refusal to accept the authority of the law. Either Jesus was a blasphemer, or he effectively abolished the law. The resurrection made it clear that it was the latter. The roles were reversed. What used to be blasphemy, Jesus' power and authority, are now God's authentic manifestation. Jesus' actions in the light of the resurrection are no longer misguided. The resurrection is the start of the proclamation of freedom before the law. It must be noted that Jesus never opposed the law in general. He merely interpreted it with power and authority, and in a spirit of freedom born of his message concerning God and the kingdom. In Jesus' view, love summed up the law and the prophets. The community in Palestine at first did not see much opposition between Jesus and the law. It considered Jesus' actions as those of the new Moses awaited by Judaism, perfectly consistent with Mosaic law. For St. Paul, the opposition between Jesus and the law is not absolute. Do we mean that faith makes the law pointless? Not at all. We are giving the law its true value, But with the death of Jesus, the law has come to an end. Paul says, in his letter to the Galatians, that the love manifested in Jesus constitutes the fullness of the law. We can ask ourselves if Jesus clashed with the law as such, or with the interpretation and manipulation made of the law at the time. And we can answer that Jesus challenged the juridical positivist tradition of Israel, in the sense in which this tradition had come to see itself as the law. When speaking of the law, we are referring to the interpretation and use that Jesus' contemporaries made of it. The Pharisees believed that the law included the way of interpreting it. With the resurrection, freedom before the law was confirmed by the God of Israel himself. With the resurrection, God says that the law is not the absolute value. By itself, the law should lead to Christian maturity, to the freedom of the children of God. And that is why, when one does not live in the freedom of God's children, the kingdom of heaven is denied and delayed. Even given the conflict with the law, the governing bodies, and the people, Jesus could still have fled from death, as on other occasions, or he could have astutely or miraculously escaped. But even when he could foresee the real possibility of his death, Jesus confronted it in a way that was coherent with his words and attitude, and he expected to see God's action and judgment in it, because in spite of everything, he expected it to be a judgment of mercy. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Jesus faced his passion and death, moved by God's will, which he understood as the inner need to be consistent and present in the tragedy of his life. If they reject me, let them do it to the extent that they want to reject me. The passion narratives, such as the judgment, the crown of thorns, the flogging, etc., underscore the circumstantial and accidental nature of each element of the passion, although afterwards the evangelists found ties to the scriptures and saw the events as their fulfillment. Jesus hoped at the end, and until the end, that God would intervene. But God didn't. The death was truly a tragedy in both historical and theological terms. Existentially, for Jesus and the disciples, God was not on his side at the hour of his death. The death might not have happened if people had responded differently to Jesus' message and person. In absolute terms, the death on the cross was, in itself, neither desired by God nor necessary. But given Jesus' condition and the condition of the people of his time, it was something that could happen and did. Jesus' death was not a judicial accident or an involuntary mistake. His executioners put him to death to safeguard their position, as well as public order and religion, from the perceived threat that Jesus represented for them. Jesus' behavior had little to do with social and revolutionary criticism, as they are understood today. Tax collectors were not an exploited class. They were the exploiters, as well as collaborators with the occupying forces from Rome. God's message of love was also addressed to them. In Jesus' view, God is Father to all people. His commandment derives from love for humanity, and therefore, love of God and love of neighbor are essential in his message. Neither love for God nor love for neighbor, which are reduced to a single precept, can be circumscribed by a set of casuistic laws.